This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. My name is Matt Bungard, and with me today, Mick Hampton. Welcome back.
Good to be back. Good to be here.
And with all the news coming out of Camp Manly last night and overnight, we thought it was only appropriate to bring back on one of our Sea Eagles diehards who is in a dark, dark place this morning. AAP's own Scott Bailey. Hello.
Bad morning to you guys.
Yeah, sorry, but I can hear the sadness in your voice.
Yeah, look, breaking it to my child today that Tom wouldn't be on the field for the next month or two was a tough experience. Probably the only thing that was tougher was actually seeing it happen last night. It's gonna be a tough season, I think, boys.
I can't believe that she looked you in the eye and said, "Dad, did Manly do everything they could to manage his hamstring problems? He's had major reoccurrences in that area several times."
Well, mate, she did this morning. She comes in the morning now. I'm like, for some reason, thinks it's fun to like play drums on the bed and wakes me up. And I was like, stop, because I was in a bad mood already. And then she jumped on and she was like, "Did Manly win?" And I was like, oh, got some bad news, darling. She's like, "Oh, they lost." I'm like, "Yeah." And Tom hurt his leg, to which she responded, "Oh, not again. Why is he hurt it?" And then now they're going to be without three players because I told her about Saab as well. Now they're going to be without three players because Kamali's not back. And it's like, yeah, he's back next week. But anyway.
Was she pro or anti Schuster?
She didn't really think much about Schuster. They didn't think it was worthwhile.
Wow. The disdain.
Yeah. It's funny. Well, not funny, but like peculiar that streak of outside backs getting hurt in the first half of games continued with that Saab injury as well. Like, it's remarkable how frequently that has happened this year. And again, for Manly, and we'll start talking about the game, Dolphins 30, Sea Eagles 24. They started brightly, and I think this is now the fourth game this year, including last week, where they've looked fantastic for the opening period of the game and then just completely fallen in a heap. So, Scotty, I mean, what is doing? Like, I got a message from Joe Barton this morning that said, "Please, absolutely cook the Sea Eagles. Give it to them this morning. Because what's going on? Not a serious football team. Not a serious football team." What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most frustrating thing is when I look at that team is they could easily be 9-1, which I know sounds absolutely ridiculous. But you look at the games they've lost. They've lost to the Dragons, which they played poorly. That's the game that they, you know, I mean, ironically, that's the team they probably should have beat out of all the ones they've lost to, but they didn't. But then since then, they dropped the lead to Parra, where they led 14-0 out at CommBank and got, you know, beat through the middle by Junior Barlow when he came on. They led the Warriors 16-0, wasn't it? In Auckland.
It's double digits. It was double digits.
Yeah, it was double digits and had the draw there. Again, they were just hanging on for dear life in the second half in that match. Obviously, last night, where again it was funny, right? Because I actually don't know that losing an outside back hurt them that much, because it wasn't Benjaboy, which you got found out in the centres. Again, it was their middle defensively that got found out. Toff Sipley, who I am a believer in, but he missed two.
He had a tough one.
And then the other game they lost, of course, was the Raiders last week, where they were 20-0 up.
Yeah, they've blown four double-digit leads.
So they could easily be sitting there at 9-1. Yeah. It's insane to think about. And, you know, the most frustrating thing is they've beaten the Panthers, they've beaten the Roosters. They actually are a team. They're not a genuine contender that's going to win the comp, but they're a team that could do some damage in the finals, but I just don't know if they're even going to get to the finals at this point.
Why do you think Manly have a habit of collapsing like this, man?
So I think they are, I mean, effectively the Bazball of rugby league, aren't they? And they don't necessarily have other gears that they can find. It's kind of all out or they go into their cage. So I think that's one problem. And I think, you know, something that shows there is that, I think Manly have now lost 22 of their last, or sorry, they've won four of their last 26 in the wet.
Is that bad?
Yeah, I dare say it's horrible. So yeah, I mean, so that, you know, and that's not necessarily about collapses, but it does show a bit about their game style. But it also, I think, it speaks to their bench. And while I think at times this year Toff Sipley, Nathan Brown in particular, and Matt Welsh to a lesser extent have had you know, some really good games. They're just not overly consistent. And often when, you know, that period either side of halftime when both sides have their benches on, that's where Manly lose the momentum of games a lot. And I think it's also, you know, Anthony Seibold said during the week, if I may use another cricket analogy, Manly try and hit every ball for six at the moment. And at times where they can just call it a bit without going in, you know, completely into their, into a cage, but like just call it a bit. They can't get that right. Last night, and I don't know that it was a particularly terrible play, but the moment that changed last night's game is Tom Trbojevic puts a grubber in on third tackle. The ball just goes dead. And then obviously a minute later, the Dolphins roll downfield. Herbie Farnworth bats that ball back in. It goes off Cherry Evans' legs, line drop out. Game changes in the next 5 minutes. But again, it's just, I don't know that Manly know how to just rein in that little bit when they need to, just to keep control of the game.
Yeah, I think it's a good point you make about the benches, because with those three Dolphins tries in 5 minutes before halftime, the Lemuelu one is just they had a bit of possession and he's hit a nice hole on the edge. But the other two, the Trey Fuller try, which was unbelievable, and the Mark Nichols try, which was unbelievable in a different sense, they both came from the Dolphins getting some of their speed men through the middle of the field. It was Fuller himself for his try before he chipped over the fullback. And for the Nichols try, it was Jake Avarillo. And both times it was a bench middle who's been on for about 15, nearly 20 minutes, which is about the limit that you can expect from some of these guys, and just really poor misses, you know? So I think that is a problem. They sort of struggle to retain that intensity. And they've even done that in some of their wins this year. Like, but something you said in the lead up to the Manly Raiders game, when I was, prophesizing a lot of doom, you said, well, Manly haven't actually blown a lot of teams out this year. Even in games where they've looked really strong and their attack has really sparkled, it's not like they've turned it on and won by 40. So even in games they've won, there have been times when they haven't been consistent through the 80 minutes.
Incredibly, their biggest win is against Penrith. It's remarkable. What?
Yeah.
That's perverse.
But you know what's interesting? Like, the thing about that is that's the game where their forwards, I think that was easily their forwards' best game of the year. Like, Toff Sipley was really, really good that day. Nathan Brown was like kamikaze man flying back of kickoffs. Like, they were both exceptionally good that day. And that's the level at which Manly need, you know, close to that level that Manly need them to play at a consistent basis. And they haven't been able to do that. And I think the concerning thing for Manly is, like, they've had injuries, but they haven't had, like, you know, it's not like the guys who are letting them down off the bench are necessarily guys who aren't in their first grade. So I think there was one game they had where they were without a lot of forwards. It might have been the Titans game, and they won that anyway. Again, gave up an early lead. But it's the fact that the guys that are part of their best 17 are the ones who are getting found out off the bench. And that's just, you know, the nature of Manly's roster to a large extent and their cap management.
Absolutely. The big injury last night, Trbojevic, we're still waiting to hear exactly what it is, but it is a hamstring problem. He's probably going to be out for a while. Scotty, how does this change the way you're feeling about Manly's season? Is it time to totally panic?
Kind of, but not entirely. I think there's a few things on this. So firstly, I mean, there's some suggestion from people who are like, oh, it's okay because, you know, Trbojevic isn't, you know, the God he once was. I mean, look, he's not playing at 2021 levels, but Manly is still a far better side when Tom Trbojevic is on the field. And, I can't agree with people who suggest they're not. I mean, I understand defensively he hasn't been superb in sort of those covered tackles on his own line this year, but like the threat that Manly have with him at the back, and especially when Olakau'atu and him are both on the field at the same time and making the defences make decisions on the edge is crucial. I don't think the timing's not horrible for Manly. Like, if say it's a grade two and he misses 6 to 8 weeks, and I think Manly will be cautious on that and err towards 8 weeks. In that period, like next 2 months, Manly have two byes. He would have missed probably two games anyway through Origin. So he probably misses 5 games in total for Manly, but he would have missed two of them anyway, if you know what I'm saying. So I don't think it's a complete disaster for Manly in that sense. What I think is really interesting is how they shape their team over that period. And I think the loss of Jason Saab is actually a really big one, because they like playing that up-tempo style and Jason Saab is really crucial to that. And I think the difference between Jason Saab and, say, Jackson Paulo is quite significant. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see, and I don't think they'll do it, but it'd be interesting to see if they brought Brad Parker back in to play in the centres. He's been playing in reserve grade in the second row this year, and Manly seem to see it as a long-term play to make sure that in years to come he's turned into a full-time second rower. But I'd be interested to see if they went, say, Tolu Cooler at the back, Tommy Talau and Ruben Garrick on the wings, and Ben Trbojevic and Brad Parker in the centres. I don't think that'll happen. My gut feel is we'll end up seeing maybe Ben will stay in the centres, but we'll end up seeing Jackson Baller on a wing and Ruben Garrick stay in the centres. But anyway, that's how I would like to see it play out. I don't think it's necessarily Panic Station season over, but yeah, it's
going to be... I don't either. I think the competition is really not that strong this year, and you could have a lean couple of weeks. And let's be real, if Trbojevic had been fit in the next few weeks, he would have missed a couple of Manly games for Origin duty anyway. So you're probably only missing, you know, if he's out for 6-7 weeks, whatever, with a bye and with some Origin games, you're probably only missing an extra 3-4 games of Turbo that you would have had otherwise. So if you look at it like that, it's not a complete disaster. And as great as Turbo is, I think that guys like Cherry Evans, to me, has been by a mile Manly's most important player this year, and he's still in the field. And I think that as far as deputies go, Ruben Garrick is a pretty good player. He's obviously not Tom Trbojevic, but yeah, I don't think it's complete doom and gloom for Manly yet, just because of the fact that they would have lost him for a couple of games anyway.
I was going to say, they play Melbourne and Brisbane in the next fortnight anyway, games they may have lost anyway, to be honest. So I actually think the two losses in the last 2 weeks is what's going to hurt them more, because they're a team that's going to be, like, the way I look at this competition, there's five teams that you can say right now almost certainly going to be the finals. It's a lot of teams that are going to be battling for those last three spots, and the two games they've lost in the last fortnight are against two teams that, you know, fill into the same category.
Yeah, absolutely, mate.
I agree with you guys to an extent, but I do think Manly will be extremely cautious with this because of how many hamstring injuries he's had in the past. And I do think there's a chance that this gives Manly's confidence a real hit, not just for the players who are still playing, but for Trbojevic himself. You know, like, you can't tell me it won't play on his mind that it's another hamstring injury after an extensive history of him. You know, I don't think it's reasonable then to expect him to when he does come back, that he'll totally hit the ground running at 1,000%. You know, we've seen it in the past. When he's come back from some of these hamstring injuries, it's taken him a while to really heat up afterwards. It is an injury with a very high reoccurrence rate. Shout out NRL Physio. And I also think the way Manly like to attack with spreading the ball and playing expansively, that really is contingent on being confident. You know, like, that's as much a mentality as it is anything else. And when Trbojevic is, like, I don't think he's been playing that well these last couple of weeks, but just having him there gives them a massive boost. Like, just his presence makes them a better team, because I think they all believe more in what they're doing if Tommy's there. So I don't know. It's a real, real test for Manly. It's a real test if they've got the true steel in them, you know? So I think in the past they've been guilty of falling in a heap when Trbojevic isn't there and then trusting that he'll be able to save them when he does come back. But they've got to give him something to save. They've got to give him something to come back to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, just on the other point, I think we totally call it the place fullback, not Ruben Garrick. Yeah, but either way, so that's just the point that we kind of glazed over before. But yeah, either way, you're right. Like, they're going to need to be there or thereabouts. They can't afford to. I think they play Souths and the Dragons between Origin 1 and Origin 2. And those
two losses right there.
Those few games are going to be crucial. Like, if they drop those two games, then, you know, I think it might be a very, very hard way back.
Let's talk about the Dolphins.
They just hang in there, don't they?
Yeah.
That's hanging in there. Fuller went really,
from
really
having
well.
A pretty poor game to scoring to looking like the reincarnation of Billy Slater. Just incredible. An incredible goal.
That, man.
Mate, I was on my feet in my living room. Like, that was outrageous. And then, yeah, there's this deluge of points just before halftime, which has become Manly's calling card. But, you know, also just great work from the Dolphins. Like, getting a chip and chase Billy Slater's try into a Mark Nichols try was, as a neutral, couldn't really ask for anything more than that.
I don't think you can say you're a neutral when it comes to Mark Nichols.
Did you see some guy had a sign asking for his undies and he got them?
Yes, I rewound it on the KO to make sure it wasn't you.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that.
But the Finns, so they started pretty poorly. They were giving Manly a lot of cheap field position and possession through errors and intercepts and all that sort of thing. But The Dolphins have got a really, really good habit of just staying on the job in recent weeks. And even in that disappointing loss to Newcastle, where they were off their game for a good 60 minutes, they didn't fall apart. They were still creating chances right to the end, you know? And that's kind of what they did in this one. You know, they were down 16-6, but they didn't throw their hands up. They didn't panic. They sort of just stayed on the job in a way that is really, really impressive, I think. And particularly in that second half, when I thought Manly were getting a pretty good whistle from Ash Klein, and we can maybe talk about the Jesse Bromwich face slap penalty here, which I just thought was very unbecoming what happened there. But they sort of just held fast. And then when they got the chance with Bostock, they executed really well. It was an execution that Manly wasn't quite able to match when they'd had some possession on the Dolphins line, both before and after that. So yeah, a really, really impressive win for the Finns, who they can leak a lot of points, but they can score them too. And they can score them from deep. You know, they're a very quick, dynamic footy team. I thought Herbie Farnworth was really strong on return. I liked that he was at left center and that they kept Avarillo on the right-hand side, because I think it's clear that Avarillo is much more effective down that edge and Farnworth can be effective down either edge. So yeah, a very, very handy win for the Finns. And you know, my Finn is up. Where else would it be?
Yeah, Katoa again, very impressive. Yeah. His involvement in the Bostock, by the way, he is a player. I'm a big fan of Jack Bostock. And yeah, some of these young guys, everything's starting to really come together for them. Like, they get a bit lucky at the end. Like, that Tommy Talau sort of bomb try at the end, very, very close. Like, he did all the hard work, and then I thought he was going to penguin slide his way over the try line, and the ball just comes loose. And we might have got some golden point. But this is the thing about Manly. Like, you can, as and I'm sure Scotty and Bardo and all our other Manly listeners are furious at these guys, but as team of the pod, I say the roulette wheel has nailed this, because they are appointment viewing every week, win or lose. Every Manly game has been so entertaining, regardless of whether they win the game or not.
I mentioned Bazball before, and it's great to watch, but it doesn't always come off. And I think that is essentially Manly again. That's exactly it. Just on the Dolphins, Isaiah Katoa, man. Like, I know you guys have talked about before, like, how impressive it is that we're not talking about this kid for highlight reels players necessarily. Like, it's the game management. It's the, like, I just love the way at the moment he's straightening up the attack. I think the game against the Cowboys last week, I want to say three of their tries came when he just straightened up the attack, found Cody Nikorima, and then the outside back scored off the back of it. I've been so impressed with this kid in the last month or so, in particular, but all season, but especially the last month or so. What do you reckon they do with Trey Fuller next week if Hammer's back?
I think you have to keep him in the team.
Mm.
I think he's been too dynamic and effective to drop. Marshall King is one of the very few hookers in the league who can play close to 80 minutes every week. I think he's averaging 75 minutes a week this year, and it was 74 minutes a week last year. And they like having someone on the bench who can cover dummy half. It's been like Mason Teague or Kurt Donahue over the last few weeks, but I would slot Fuller into that spot. And I think having a utility back on the bench is becoming something of a must, because we've seen how many games have been impacted by HIAs in the first half. You've got to have someone there who can cover your back line. And I think Fuller can. They're meant to get Tabuai Fidow back next week. Slots in at fullback. Fuller's on the bench. Get Fuller out there buzzing around the ruck if no one gets injured. If someone does get injured, you've got, at the very least, a quality NRL player to replace them. So I think he's got to stay in the team.
Interesting. I was looking at last night because I was trying to think about what they do. Like, he's never played or he's never started outside of fullback in Queensland Cup. So it's not like, I mean, I don't know how he goes defending out in the centres or, you know, whatever that situation comes up. You'd think he'd be okay. But because I was even thinking, like, okay, do you start him? Like, I know I sort of thought, like, do you start him even? Could you play him on the wing or something like that? Just get him on the field for 80 minutes. And not that really anyone in their back line looks like getting dropped, but there's just nowhere he appears to be able to play but fullback, or I guess that, you know, that role that Dylan Walker has become known for, coming on the second half as that attacking lock, so to speak.
Did they put a crowd figure up for this game? Because I've got the NRL.com like game page open and it doesn't have one on it.
I think it was like 14,000.
Okay. I was just curious, going to ask you boys what you think about that, because whilst the Finns have been having a really good year, seems like the crowds at Suncorp have dipped a substantial amount. I know the weather was shit, but regardless of that, I feel like a small crowd like that at Suncorp on a for a primetime game is a bit weird. I wonder if they will think about taking more games back to SeaWorld in the future.
That'd be very exciting for me, a suburban grounds enthusiast. Yeah. But they've made such a big deal of saying that they're not actually Redcliffe, that they're a team for Brisbane and all that sort of shit. So I don't think Wild Horses could get him out of Suncorp.
So they play any games at Sunshine Coast this year?
Not sure.
Don't know.
I wonder if that's, I should know that, sorry. But I wonder if that's like an option. Because they talk about
it's that okay that you don't know that, Scott.
It's all right, Scott.
I'm quickly checking KO Stadium, Perth. They play a home game in Perth. No, they don't.
So like, I just wonder if they, if, you know, I don't know what contractual deal they've got in place at the moment with the Queensland government and whatnot, but I do wonder if they, if an option is maybe sharing some love up to the Sunshine Coast and maybe they can get something
Could you possibly second yourself to the Sunshine Coast without a phone until Tonto Vojvodic returns from injury?
I mean, I could succumb myself to living on the Sunshine Coast for a long time, so sure.
Try! This is a try! Brilliant! Brilliant play! I think it's a try! Oh, I don't know if this is going to be a try!
Gee, what about this bloke?
Okay, it is time for another round of What About This Bloke, where we take a trip down memory lane and talk about a player from the past. Campo, this one is near and dear to your heart in more ways than one.
Very much so. So sitting around and naming old footy players is the finest thing a person can do. It's literally my favourite thing to do in the entire world. And Bert's right. This week, it's one of the family. My dad, who's an avid listener, an avid Patreon name changer, he got picked this week, and he has chosen Andrew Leeds, one of the great stalwarts of 90s rugby league. I've got a lot to say about Andrew Jumper Leeds. Do you guys have anything before I get going?
Well, I'm a big Leeds United fan. Would you like me to talk about their playoff hopes?
Yeah, how are they looking? Are they going up?
First leg Sunday night, 9 p.m. See you there. And then
who they got?
Norwich, which is spicy because our coach Daniel Farker has won promotion with Norwich not once but twice before in his career. So.
I just hate Norwich so much.
I also hate Norwich. So yeah.
Scotty, you got anything on Jumper?
I just more think your tremendous story, which no doubt you're about to tell about the last game at Campbelltown in 1999, is the best Andrew Leeds story that could possibly be told. So
there's a lot, man. So he had a pretty storied career. So he started out playing rugby. He played like 15 tests for the Wallabies in the mid to late 80s, and eventually made the move over to rugby league with Parramatta Eels, and didn't have the happiest time there. The Eels were really, really struggling in those post premiership years. Mick Cronin came in as coach and probably didn't give Jumper the sort of technical coaching that he was after, so much so that when Parramatta cut him at the end of 91, Jumper rang up Phil Gould and said, "I'll come and play for you for nothing. Just teach me how to play this sport, which I've never played before except for first grade." So it's a very, very early iteration of the Penrith finishing school. You know what I mean? He has a year with Penrith in 1992. It's a tough year for the Panthers. That's the year Ben Alexander dies. But he has a really good year at fullback, and he parlays that into a big deal with Western Suburbs, where he stays for years, and he becomes one of the Magpies' top players through their final years. Like when they make the finals in 96, he's one of their best players. He's occasionally captain in the club. Very unlucky not to play for City Origin at some stage, which would have just been a massive celebration for all of us. And then towards the end, he's sort of slowing down a little bit. He retires two games into the 99 season. In a measure of where the Magpies were at the time, he retires and then immediately becomes the team's physio and starts running the water for him. And they get to the last game of the 99 season. The Magpies, they're struggling, right? They've only won three games all year. They've conceded the most points of any team in history. They're playing the Warriors. It's the last game at Campbelltown as a standalone club. And, you know, everybody knows it. They're merging as West Tigers. This is the Magpies' last day. And Jumper had this plan. He wanted to be the last person to score a try for the Magpies. So he's running the water, and they had a scrum play that they'd drawn up. where instead of passing it to someone who is playing in the game, they were going to pass it to Jumper and he was going to run over and score. And they were like, fuck it, it's the last game. What are they going to do? Kick us out of the comp? Let's just do it. So they get a scrum with about 10 minutes left. They're down by 50. And they run the play and it's on. And Steve Georgiou is the halfback. They do the little interchange of passing. He's got Jumper flying up the wing in his yellow training shirt, throws the pass out there, and Francis Melli intercepts it and scores under the post at the other end, and West lose by 60.
It's so good.
It's tough.
That's so good.
It's tough, man. So the reason Jumper is someone close to my heart and my family's heart is he played rugby with my dad and a bunch of his brothers at Parramatta Two Blues in the 80s. And they're still great, great mates to this day. And dad and my uncles have all these stories about Jumper that they have made me promise not to broadcast on the airwaves. But there's some fun ones, like early in his league career, he got interviewed by Rugby League Week. And one of the questions was, what's your favorite restaurant? So they picked this shitty pizza place off the freeway where they all ate at training every Thursday, and they got free pizza there for 2 years until the place burnt down in a possible insurance scam. And then in 2000, so the year after Jumper finished playing NRL, he went and had a season in fourth grade for Parramatta with a couple of my uncles, and it was like all their old mates, and it was that classic thing of just like old tough bastards who can't really run anymore but just get out there and win because they're winners. You know, they made the grand final, ended up losing, and it was a great sort of swan song for a lot of them. And then Jumper's had a really decorated, like, post-playing career too. He was a trainer at West for 1,000 years, was a trainer there when they won in 05. And now he's out at Penrith. He's part of the physio team out there, like sort of specializes with helping guys return from injury. And he's picked up a new nickname as well. So Jumper's 58 now, and his hair's gone all silver. And when Isaac Tungo hurt his pec last year and was meant to be out for a long time, he ended up coming back early in part because of the rehab team they got out there, but he was working pretty closely with Jumper. And Tungo came back to training and was talking to the guys, and they were like, we thought you were done for ages. And he was like, mate, there's this fella there who just got it done. I thought he was just some old bloke with white hair, but he's actually the White Dragon. So now all the guys at Penrith, if you get injured, they say you've got to go see the White Dragon.
That's incredible.
Which is awesome, you know. Mm-hmm. So I would say the definition of a good rugby league man, Andrew Leeds.
I reckon a good rugby league man often is one of those people too that, like, people who are around the game now, takes them a while to realize they're actually a really good player as well. Like, if you know what I mean? Because they just, like, it's so much part of the fabric of club land that you know, they've been around forever. And like, he was, well, I would have been 9 when he finished up playing. Like, it took me a while to actually realize, no, this guy was like a, because I've always just known him as the guys at the Tigers or at the Panthers. You know what I mean? Like, a player from, you know, that was a superstar in his own right that played for the Wallabies and whatnot, especially in rugby union, like a superstar in his own right there. So, but I think, Camper, you may have missed, do you know what else he's doing now on the side? I was having a look at this before. I read you a story from the Herald in 2020. He's a beekeeper.
Is he? I didn't know that.
He's a beekeeper.
I could have used him in that baseball game the other day.
Yeah. I quote from him, I've been stung a few times. My bees are very aggressive. So.
The White Dragon's beating some nasty bees.
White Dragon honey.
It sounds like a Yu-Gi-Oh card, the White Dragon that spits bees at you. Fantastic. I did pull up the Rugby League Project page from that last ever game while you were talking about it. First of all, I had no idea that Shane Perry, the Shane Perry, played 5/8 in that last game.
Yeah.
Not that he had a 5-year hiatus from the NRL before he won the premiership in 06, but I do love that the last ever sin bin for the West Magpies was Lincoln Radonikis. Yeah. Any relation?
You know what? I'm going to have to check the records on that one.
So, because Rugby League Project doesn't put them in chronological order, it always puts try scores in alphabetical order. Who did get the last ever Magpies try? Was it Justin Brooker or Brett Hodgson?
It was Justin Brooker. Yeah.
Okay. All right. There you go.
It was a good try too. He ran like 50 meters, beat 3 blokes.
Yeah, some absolute dudes in that team. But yeah, of course, they lost 60-16. If anyone was wondering.
Yeah, I think they conceded more than 60 points like 7 times that year.
If you're ever feeling bad about how your team's going, just go and pull up the 1999 Magpies summary page and just look at like their last They win in round 14 against Balmain, ironically enough, and then they lose every game to finish the season and concede more than 40, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times in like 13 games and more than 50
It got tough. I wrote about that
for
the ABC a few weeks ago, so go check that out if you want to. Andrew Jumper leads. You know how we used to call fullbacks custodians?
Yep.
I feel like he's a real custodian fullback. But very safe, very dependable, was a really good goal kicker. Just got it done, you know?
Yeah. Ironically enough, Justin Brookwell did not play in the NRL in 2000 or 2001. Came back for a handful of games for South. Scored one try, ironically, also against the Warriors.
There you go. Yeah. Justin Brooker, the Warriors.
The Warrior
brain.
Killer. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right. But Andrew Leeds, fantastic.
Yeah. We had a backup pick
yes,
for this
we'll do that next week,
which we will do next week. Who was it that picked it again?
It's Rocky Encarnacion.
Oh yeah, it's a great pick from Rock as well.
I'm sorry, Scotty, I did tell you to prepare for.
I was very prepped for.
Do you want to dial in next Friday just for the What About This Bloke?
Why not? Look me
all right.
Sounds good.
I'm sorry, mate. Because like obviously, yeah, it wasn't. And then Campo.
This was a late switch.
I know you prepared for that person, so we won't waste that, and we'll do it next week. But for now, let's crack on and talk about the weekend ahead, starting at 6 p.m. at Penrith Stadium, Blue Bet Stadium, if you will. The Panthers, very short price favourites against the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs.
I am really looking forward to this one because there's a lot of layers to it. Like the top layer is the clash of styles, right? So Canterbury have found some success in recent weeks, working off the first receiver, playing as fast as they can, mitigating the lack of size they have in the forwards by playing towards their speed and their mobility. And they've done that to great effect the last few weeks. The Panthers are the meanest, scariest bastards who have ever, ever lived. And all they ever really want to do is beat the shit out of their opponents, and they want to use their size and their power and their sort of endless aggression. So it's an interesting clash of styles in that way. There's also the number of former Panthers on the Bulldogs, especially Stephen Crichton, his return to Penrith. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to how Paul Alamotti goes against Canterbury as well, because he was the Prince of Belmore last year until he wasn't. So I think I'm hoping that we could get a real cracker here.
It's a good point you make on Alamotti, because it's almost like he's the more surprising movement out of any of those that have gone back and forth, like the move between the two clubs in the last couple of years. And, you know, he was touted as the next big thing, the local guy, yada, yada. And obviously things didn't work out there last year. He struggled to get a game in first grade after, the first couple of months. I reckon he might have a point to prove. It'll be interesting to see, too, what side he plays tonight, just whether they keep him, because he's a left side centered generally, with Isaac Tunga out, where they moved Taylor May to the right.
Alamotti played left center against the Tigers and then right wing against the Cowboys, and like that's part of the Panther thing. Like, if you're playing there in the back five, you've got to be able to play wing and center, and you've got to be able to play both sides. Like, it's almost non-negotiable.
But either way, like, man, this for me, this is the week where I can see Penrith flexing their muscle. Like, I do understand why the Bulldogs look a team that I think they're ranked fourth for defense at this point in the season, which is the best they've been at this point in the season since 2017. Their attacking number is actually good. They look dangerous. I thought Matt Burden looked like he was willing to go to the right side a bit more last week as well. So there's things I like about this Bulldog side. But the thing for me is, like, Penrith are pretty close to full strength. I know they're without Isaac Tungo, Scott Sorensen out as well. I saw him during the week, man. He's not far away. I'd almost say definitely be back next week. But Nathan Cleary back. I think they played, four games for them so far this year. Back at Penrith for the first time in 7 weeks or so. It all looks pretty much towards Penrith for me. And that is why.
Here's Taylor rolling the ball end on in. He's after it. He might have got it down. He thinks he did. Oh!
Cold train car.
I will take the most coward option available and back Penrith at home against the Bulldogs for the Coltrane.
What do we say about the Coltrane Cup, Bert?
It rewards cowardice and punishes bravery.
That's right. That's right.
I can't tip them because I picked Penrith last week, but I think that's a fine selection. You're doing quite well this year, Scott. You're 7-2, sitting down there in a 20th spot out of 150 or whatever it is. So
I managed to tip against the Titans on the 1 week they lost, but otherwise I feel okay. That's like the Titans in the 1 week they won. Otherwise I feel okay.
Shout out to Steve, by the way, who's sincerely shooting the moon and is 9-0 with 9 legitimate wrong tips. So he's doing good.
Good on him. I'm glad that you brought up Burton, Scotty. I think he's been doing really well these last couple of weeks and has really settled into 5'8 in a way that he wasn't able to do last year. And getting that left side going is sort of where all of Canterbury's good stuff comes from. So I think that's another big key for them. If I was a Bulldogs fan, I would be hoping that Connor Tracy is fit and can play at fullback, because if it's Blake Taff, then I think Cleary will really, really test him with his kicking game. I'm very interested to see how Reid Marnie goes against the Panthers, because I listened to the show you guys did on Monday. Thanks to Martin Journalism Gabor for stepping in for me. I actually hate what Reid Marnie's doing.
Of course you do.
And I don't know. No, listen.
I'm the little prick. You're the big guy. That's how this works.
I don't hate that he's a little prick, all right? I understand that's what he's got to do to be able to survive, and he's really effective at it. And I don't mind people being that way on the field, but if you are that way on the field, you have to fight people every now and then. Mick Ennis would fight someone. Chris Sandow would fight someone.
Chris Sandow fought Mick Ennis, and it ruled.
Exactly, right? I don't like it if a player is doing all that chippy stuff and then hiding behind blokes. You know what I mean? And I think Marnie's had a little bit of that in him sometimes. Like, if you're gonna be this way, you've got to back it up every now and then, and I don't think he has as much. So... And like over the next 2 weeks, so they're playing the Panthers, the toughest team in the competition. And the next week they're playing the Raiders, who have a lot of big dudes with poor impulse control. So we're really going to get a test if Marnie wants to be the Doberman in this kind of way. But like, come on, man, like fight someone, throw a punch. I want to see it. I think he can fight too. I want to see him do it. Like just.
Nah, I love what he's doing. It's great.
It's not going to stop. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, no way.
And what the Dodgers mean, yeah.
No, God, I will tip Penrith for it as well.
I will also tip Penrith.
Okay, Friday, 8 p.m. I was thinking Friday. It's already Friday. Everyone knows it's Friday, Matt. Get it together. Parramatta hosting the Broncos. No Clint Gutherson, of course. No Adam Reynolds, of course. Also no Jesse Arthurs, who's out too. Corey Oates comes back. Talked about Josh Rogers, fellas.
He is a rugby league player.
Yep.
Who is currently signed to the Broncos.
He played one game last year, right?
Yeah, he played in that last round.
In that last round against the Storm?
Yeah. It was all Q Cup players, pretty much. It was the Q Cup All-Star game.
Yeah.
I know he's from Perth. That's cool. And he's played a lot of reserve grade, like a good 3 or 4 seasons there. So I think all Brisbane are looking for from him is a little bit of the Jock Madden experience. I'm expecting Ezra Mam to take a fair bit of control in attack the way he did when Reynolds was out earlier this season. And they just need Rogers to kick pretty well and play the percentages, you know. And most guys who have served a lengthy apprenticeship in either New South Wales or Queensland Cup have been able to do that. So, but yeah, I don't know shit about him, to be honest with you.
Did something happen to Jock Madden? Because there was a story that last week about Jock Madden was going to step up after Adam Reynolds was hurt and all this stuff, but he's not. Does not
matter. What was it that he heard out at that Campbelltown game we were at, Scotty?
He heard his pec out at Campbelltown. So, but they're confident this will be the last week he's missing. They think he'll be back next week.
Yeah, fair enough.
Just on Josh Rogers, I feel like they must have a bit of faith in him, because there is a world where they could have gone Tristan Saylor at number 6, Ezra Mams the organizer at number 7. So obviously, like as Campo says, he must be a handy organizer, game manager who can put his kicks in, do his job. I've been impressed with Ezra Mam when he's taken on the controlling role this year without Adam Reynolds. So I think that gives me a bit of confidence for the Broncos. And so just one other thing on it there. They are 7-4 without Reynolds since
pretty good record.
Newcastle. It's not too bad.
It's not bad at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Which
here's Taylor rolling the ball end on end. He's after it. He might have got it down. Oh, he thinks he did. Oh,
Cold Train Car.
Don't know much about Josh Rogers, but I know a lot about the Brisbane Broncos. Coltrane them a couple of weeks ago. I will take them away against another Western Sydney team. Here, stack them up. 10-0. We're on to Cincinnati.
Too big to fail.
It's just feeling that Magic Round's going to be my undoing. I know that, but we're just going to get there first, and then we can worry about that then. But yeah, we're on the path to double digits, and I will take my second Broncos. These are the weeks that you need teams like the Broncos and the Panthers for. Are weeks where you look down the slate of games, and there aren't a lot of clear-cut options. And the two that do jump off the page to me were Penrith, who I can't tip, and Brisbane, who I am tipping. So, yeah, I will only be able to use the Broncos once more this year, but I think that there'll be other weeks where when injuries happen and Origin happens, all that stuff, that there'll be some obvious tips that open themselves up. But right now, in a week like this, when, like, you know, Dragon South is a bit of a rough one, Tigers Knights is a coin toss, Storm Sharks is up in the air. The only other one I really considered was the Roosters, but, yeah, I'll take the Broncos.
It's interesting, Scotty, that you bring up Rogers getting the gig over Saylor, because I think part of the reason the Broncos weren't at their best against the Roosters is they almost got too excited. They got too keen. They tried to really blow the Roosters out of the water with every single play. And that can be a concern, not a concern, but that can be a thing that happens to Brisbane sometimes. Like, when you're that young and fast and pretty, like, I'd want to swing it wide every single tackle as well. So maybe they're just looking, because if Saylor was out there, it'd be run and gun, right? 100%. Yeah. So maybe with Rogers, they're just looking for something a little bit steadier, a little bit more solid, you know? Like, what's standing out to you guys about Para? Because I think a couple more losses and the drums could well and truly be beating for Brad Arthur. Gutherson out is big for them because they draw so much strength from his energy and his constant involvement. Blaise Talangi's had some okay moments at center this year, but fullback's another challenge entirely. So what are you guys expecting to see from
Para? Gutherson out was the main reason I picked Brisbane this game. Like, say what you will about him, but his effort at the back is a large part of why they've been in games they've won and games they've lost. And yeah, Talangi's had some nice moments since he came into first grade, but he's not Clint Gutherson. And I just don't know how they can sort of get his work rate there from Talangi. And I also think that, you know, Ethan Sanders, again, I'm a guy that you're very excited about for the future, but a Parramatta team without both Gutherson and Moses in it against a Brisbane team who are coming off a very heavy loss and will have a point to prove, I just feel like this one could be a step too far for them. And the other part is, like, the biggest question mark of Parramatta this year to me has been the defense from their outside backs. Like, at times, like, they've just been absolute turnstiles. And I know there's no Jesse Arthurs, but, you know, Corey Oates might be past his prime, but he can still score a try. And then those other three guys, Cobbo, Staggs and Mariner, will all find weaknesses in your back line and exploit them. So I could definitely see them having a lot of joy in this one. I think that Brisbane will rack up a fair few points here.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I actually, like, I quite liked Ethan Sanders against Manly in their game before the bye. I thought he did some good things in attack. He was pretty solid in defense considering he had Mole Olukulatu running at him. But, you know, obviously, like, defensively, like, Mike Acevo's held his spot, which was, probably under a fair bit of question. Have they played a game since then? Am I imagining that? Was that the bye last week or was it the week before?
Their bye last week.
I've got that right. Yeah. So, like, Mike Acevo held his spot. He was, you know, he's been poor defensively this year. That brain snap in the last game. No Morgan Harper, but, you know, Sean Russell into the back line, Bailey Simonson on a wing. Yeah, this, I just think, points out wide for Brisbane. Talk about Brisbane's record without Adam Reynolds. I think the Eels have played two games without Moses and Gutherson in the side since Moses got there, and they were pumped in both of them. So that doesn't, I know it's only a very small amount, but yeah, just without those two in the side, I just don't see how Parramatta get a win against Brisbane.
Yeah. I mean, they've won one game since the start of April. And that was in a game where they scored as many tries as the Cowboys. And then every other game, they lost the Tigers, which is aging worse and worse with every Tigers match. And then their other three games, 41 points conceded against Canberra, 44 against the Dolphins, 32 against the Eagles. Like, they've just been leaking a lot of points. And I think, I think Campo's right. A couple more losses and the conversation shifts dramatically. So we'll see. Okay, speaking of those Tigers, they're going to Tamworth, host Newcastle in the first game on Super Saturday. The Knights are pretty firm favourites, actually, which given you know, if you said that 2 weeks ago when Ponga went down, you might have been like, why is that happening? But you know, they've been pretty game these last couple of weeks, boys.
Yeah, game is the word. I don't know if they've played a whole lot of sparkling footy against the Dolphins and the Warriors, but they've played a lot of tough footy, and that is always going to get you further than pretty stuff that doesn't have much substance to it. We talk so much about their halves. I think Jackson Hastings has been really good these last 2 weeks. I think the wet conditions against the Warriors really helped him. It sort of slowed the game down a little bit to his more regular pace, and they played with a great intensity and a great defensive resolve. I would like to see them open up the attack just a little bit more this time. I don't know how that's going to happen, because Armstrong, as impressive as he's been, like, that's still a very new combination. But I do think, like, the way to get at the Tigers has been to sort of attack them out wide down the fringes. And there probably are some nice matchups out there for the Knights, with Best and Marju and on the left, and then Gagai down the right. But I do give the Tigers a fair chance in this one. I thought against Canterbury, they were able to create chances and not finish them. And Aiden Caesar probably hasn't been playing his best the last couple of weeks, so maybe a change in the halves can help things, even though I haven't been wild about Bud Sullivan this year. But the one change I do like for them, I like Bateman going back to the edge and Papali'i playing at lock. When I said that Bateman going to the middle was something I liked, I forgot it wasn't 2019 anymore, and he is a bit older and a bit slower. And I thought he actually played a big role in stifling their attack a fair bit. He wasn't doing a lot of passing out of the middle. He seemed very almost paralyzed by the choices that he had at his disposal. Papali'i probably hasn't been as good as they've wanted him to be over the last 18 months, but I think he'll be much more solid in yardage, and he'll give them more thrust up the center, up the middle third, which, if you pair that with Utoi Kamano and Clemmer, should be a net positive for them. But yeah, I'm struggling to get a read on this one. The Knights have the better form, certainly.
I think you go, Scotty.
I was gonna say, interestingly, on the Knights, like, I was talking to Dan Tafiti last week, and, you know, just put it out an hour or so ago, but, like, he was saying that they've actually, without Ponga, that's actually made him return to being a steely side. That they kind of had to realize that we're not just going to be a team who win games on flair and whatnot. And it's kind of almost not a good thing losing Ponga, but it's been a bit of a wake-up call, or more of a turning point for them in a lot of ways. Like, you look at the way they won last year, and he made the point that, they scored a lot of points last year, but they defended well, and they were actually... Mm. Ponga was deciding how much they won games by, but they were winning games because they were defending well. And that's probably something they've gone away from over the first month and a half of this season. I thought the other thing that I think they've really missed, and they're kind of getting a bit more used to now, is, like, Dom Young is such a big out for their pack, because, like, there's not a lot of early set go forward out of their wingers at the moment. And all of a sudden, like, the Knights middle are kind of struggling to get any punch off the back of that. So I think that's something they've kind of struggled with a bit. And I feel like they're a bit more fatigued as a result. They conceded a lot of tries through the middle early parts of the season, where they've been a lot tougher through there in the past fortnight or so. So I think they've maybe turned a bit of a corner there. I was just looking, it is meant to rain again in Tamworth tomorrow, which, again, I think plays into their hands as well. Just talking about, like, how that sort of slower but more of that middle battle probably suits them a bit, and being that grinding team as they have been for the past fortnight.
Yeah, mate, I completely agree. And It's funny how losing a star player can do that, but I think that the best version of the Knights is a team like this, as I touched on Monday. Like, to me, even with Ponga in the team, they're not a razzle-dazzle, throw the ball around team. And that's sometimes what they try to be, and it doesn't work. They are at their best when they just put their heads down and go to work. They've got big physical outside backs. They've got a lot of big physical guys in the middle of the field. And I think that they can find a way to win this game just purely on the back of that, and coupled with the fact that I just don't know where the organizational stuff's going to come from the Tigers in this one. I think Aiden Caesar struggled a bit in the last couple of weeks, but he's being replaced by Bud Sullivan, who has been quite poor in his first grade games so far this year. And we've been big fans of long game life's good Lockie Galvin, but it's a big ask to be sort of like the primary playmaker on a team, just like eight games into your first grade career or whatever it is. And yeah, David Armstrong's filled in admirably for Ponga. Of course, he's not Caelan Ponga, but he's had some nice involvements and some nice touches. And I think that with the way Gagai's been playing and Margie's been running the football and with Best sort of rediscovering himself in the last couple of weeks, I think they can find a lot of joy out the back as well. So as long as guys like Safidi and Leo Thompson, who again has been playing really well, can hold their own and Kai Pierce-Ball can keep doing his thing. I think they're a big chance. Tyson Frizzell back as well, which is obviously massive. So
yeah, he's playing good footy before he got injured. I'm kind of with you on that one, but I'm taking the Knights just because I think barring like one of those Api Coruscant games, which you can have sometimes, I just don't know if they're going to be able to create enough points. I think they're going to be relying on individual efforts or like an offload or a Knights error. I think they're going to be relying more on the Knights making mistakes for them to score points than the Knights will comparatively, you know? So I'm taking the Knights to win the Battle of Tamworth.
Their edge forwards haven't been anywhere near as good either in the last... I know you said touching a bit earlier, Camper, but their edge forwards haven't been anywhere near as good in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That early part of the year too.
I thought Finu was going to kick on a little bit when he got that when he got that start, but I guess I forgot how young he still is, you know?
God. All right. 5:30. Cogra.
How you feeling?
How am I meant to feel, mate?
I don't know. Legitimately, that's why I
asked. There's people on the extended bench that I've never heard of. Bailey Bentley Harper, Leonard Skinner, the Sweet Home Alabama guy.
I gotta tell you, man, you got Liam LeBlanc on the bench. Isn't it great to see Liam LeBlanc? So his dad, Matt LeBlanc, was Joey Tribbiani and friends, and Liam LeBlanc could have just cruised on the residuals from that, could have cruised on his inheritance forever. But no, he's out here holding up in South Sydney. It's great to see.
Yeah, born on the 13th of September, just like me. So I'm rooting for him. But
I was tempted to ask Cookie. Yes, I spoke to Damien Cook yesterday. I was tempted to ask him if they just made some names up to fill that team list out, but wasn't sure.
Well, I mean, you've no doubt heard. Well, I mean, you're in the group chat that I messaged yesterday with that Cruz Tweedy information. So yeah, as if people didn't hear our Patreon special yesterday, Cruz Tweedy, who's on New South Wales Cup bench for South this week. Some genuine guys that no one's ever heard of are playing. Campo and Pop Campton heard of him, though, because he went to St. Greg's, and his brother's name is Maverick. So their family just love Top Gun.
Cruz and Maverick Tweedy. The incredible brothers shit. Tweedy.
I am excited to see Deon Tiapa at halfback, yet to make his first grade debut. Probably got a bit more talent about him than Footy Dean. Younger, obviously, but a guy that they've had pretty big raps on for a while now. So I'm excited to see what he can do. They get the big man back. And look, apparently, I mean, Scotty, you'd know better than I would, but I mean, I read reports that he was he didn't spend much, if any, time at home when he was suspended. He spent most of his time on the training pitch, really keeping his head down. There was those rumors of him foregoing Origin selection this year because he wants to concentrate on South. What have you heard about how Mitchell's been putting his head down and focusing on things since he got suspended?
Yeah, that's correct. There was no trip back to Taree, as there often is during these kind of breaks. And my gut feel is he's taken it pretty personally how things have gone. Yeah, he's taken it pretty personally how things have gone at South and also the downfall of Jason Demetrio and whatnot. So, yeah, he spent a lot of time in the training paddock, more than I guess he probably would have if he was playing, to be fair, just because of the different ways the weeks are scheduled up. So in that sense... Yes, I think we're going to see an explosion one way or another from Latrell on Saturday. That's the thing. Like when Latrell plays with like a ridiculous amount of passion, it shows right in a lot of emotion.
Like, I just think back to that Roosters game with all the sin bins when he just took over the game and was controlled aggression, wasn't one of the guys that got sin binned and was just involved in everything good that happened. And it's just like, why can't you just be that guy every single week?
Do you know how I know that you're in really dire straits right now, Bert? You called him Mitchell earlier. Not Latrell. It's like when your mother calls you by your full name.
Yeah.
You know?
He gets his surname when I'm disappointed in it. Has there ever been a bigger positional mismatch than Gehemat Shibasaki and Isaac Thompson against Michaeli Ravalara and Zach Lomax?
I'm sure we could find one if we really thought about it.
I guess, but like not even just like a halfback be a halfback, but like two guys against two guys. Like it's grim.
Yeah.
Grim reading.
All right. Well, what do you want to see from Souths then, man? Like last week I think was something close to the rock bottom, but they've had a week to think about it now. They are getting Latrell Mitchell back. They've had a bit of time to really think about what they want to do. I know that there's heaps of blokes out. What do you want to see from them though?
Okay. So despite Cam Murray being out, Jairo miraculously wasn't hurt at the end of that game last week when he came off injured, which is good. Sean Kepi, the only time he's actually looked like a first grader this year, was at Cogra at the Charity Shield this year. So that's a promising sign. Maybe this is the house that Kepi built. Who knows?
It's not his home deck, but it's
He just feels comfortable there. Exactly. And just with Tom Burgess on the bench as well and Talas Duncan, it's not like the forward pack is not disastrously bad. Like, I don't think that the Dragons have a clear advantage there with guys like Frank Muller, Hame Sele, who was surplus to requirements at South last year, and Tom Eisenhuth as their starting middle. Don't think they're exactly pulling up any trees either. I think Jai Arrow and Keon Kalamatangi are clearly, like, former side, clearly the two best forwards on either side of this football match in terms of their pedigree.
Sula's been playing great for you.
Sula's been playing great as well. No arguments there. But so I don't think there's a forward mismatch. Cody and Ben Hunt are both very good players on their day. And then, you know, Flanagan versus Tiapa, whatever. And then the back line, as I touched on, there's some mismatches there, significant mismatches in the 2 through 5. But Latrell Mitchell's back. And if Latrell Mitchell cares about rugby league and plays well, then Souths, of course, can win this game, even with all those guys out.
So I was just going to say, there's still points on that left edge too, though, for Souths. Like,
yeah. Oh, AJ's lurking in jersey 22 as well, by the way. He could play.
I think he's still another week. But yeah, there's
I do too, but yeah.
With, like, obviously that left edge, which, you know, we see Latrell run down there with Latrell, Cody and Jack Wyden up together. They might have played, what, 2 games together this year, those three? I think they would have played Good Friday and then the Warriors debacle. So, like, there are points there for Souths. I don't know if there's going to be enough points there for Souths on that left edge, but there's something there.
I mean, yeah, through all the bullshit that they've gone through this year, you're right. Like, those three guys are all on their day world-class players, and all combining on the same side of the field could yield some points. Or Isaac Thompson, or I assume it'll be Thompson on the left wing, but we'll see what happens. God, what grim viewing.
Bert, I'm going to give you a gift.
Here's Taylor rolling the ball end on end. He's after it. He might have got it down. He thinks he did. Oh!
Cold Train Cup.
Last week, I successfully used the Campton Coltrane Jinx to single-handedly inspire Canberra to victory. As a result, I am now lurking like 126 or something
right
like
where,
that.
Right where he wants them.
On the Coltrane Cup ladder. But if that's the price of gaining this power, then that's a price I am willing to pay. I've been grappling for days now about whether I should use this curse to fight crime or should I use it for evil. And this time around, I'm going to try and extend a hand to a struggling person. So poor old Bert and his poor old Rabbitohs, they are getting AI-generated players to fill out their teams at the minute. So I will try and do what I can and take the Dragons for my Coltrane Cup tip.
Well, mate, I appreciate that.
I'm trying to help you out, mate. I am using what meager powers I have.
No.
To try and help out your Rabbitohs.
I appreciate that. Have you heard much on Campbell Graham, Scotty? Because if I have to watch Michael Cheekham play in the centres one more time, I might just start watching the Tokyo Verblitz full time.
I haven't, to be honest. I don't think there's any change in the timeline. But to be fair, with all the drama that's gone on at South, I haven't exactly asked about it.
He's an international centre, Scotty. So,
that is true, but you also had an international or coach who was coached.
An international incident.
Yeah, you had a coach who was coached internationally, that being in England. So that's taking up most of my time.
That is a stretch, but yeah. All right, and Matt French also going to get a debut. Doesn't have a picture on NRL.com.
Be more international players. He's French.
Yep.
Nice one, Scott.
He's back. Scott's back.
For Saints, I thought they were all right against Cranulla. They sort of competed hard. They kind of got sunk because Ben Hunt had a real, real shocker. And as much as I love Ben Hunt, his shockers can be pretty bad. And they can sort of make it difficult for the rest of the team to overcome him. Sully's back, though. So that's a big boost for them. Lomax back on the wing. I like that for them, too. If the Dragons play with some of the sort of grit and intensity that they've showed at times this year, I think they'll be able to handle Souths. But Every time I think I've got a handle on the Dragons, they do something like concede 60 points on Anzac Day. So who knows?
This is Ben Hunt's bread and butter. A Saturday afternoon game against a depleted team at home. He will have the ball on a string. I remember that game last year that South played at Cogre.
That game ruled.
A literal reserve grade team of South players and Ben Hunt carved up. So I've no doubt that's going to happen again.
Exciting stuff.
Is it? Scott, who are you tipping?
Yeah, I'll be tipping the Dragons. Full strength back line. I don't love their pack, but as Campo mentioned, Jaden Stewart is playing good footy. Potentially could bump up some dollars in his contract too with the Titans looking for a second row now. So, yeah, Dragons for me.
Tell you what, tell you who's not full strength, the Melbourne Storm. We wanted the Sharks to get to the fireworks factory, Nick, but we're going to have to wait another couple of weeks because this will still be a good game. And I think Suofalongo, as far as deputies go, is a pretty good replacement for Ryan Papenhuyzen. No Jerome Hughes, so Tyrone Wishart comes into the halves as the Sharks head down to face the Melbourne Storm, who are not at full strength. Grant Anderson back in the team as well on the wing. And somehow the Sharks did it again. The soft draw allegations will never be beat.
Yep. I got the shits about this because I really wanted to see how this new variation of the Sharks went against one of the better teams in the competition. And even with Papenhuyzen out and with Grant Anderson in on the wing, if Hughes was playing, then I would almost still count it as like a fair dinkum contest and one that would convince me on the Sharks a little bit more. Because I think Hughes has become Melbourne's best and most important player over the last 18 months. But without him there, I'm afraid the evidence becomes inadmissible. And the task changes a little bit for Cronulla. It's gone from prove yourself, prove that you are ready to take that final step to another team that you should just take care of business against. And it won't be easy because Melbourne is so well drilled and do so well even without some of their big names. Like, you'll remember that for that semi-final win over the Roosters last year, they had Tyrone Wishart playing halfback. They were without Hughes in that game, so they're still going to be effective and they're still going to be dangerous, but the assignment has now changed a little bit from Cronulla. It's gone from prove yourself to
you
TCB.
Better win this
to take exactly care right. of business, you know. So
it's a real shame because I think, like, you could take any number of players out of that Melbourne team. And I know it's this cliche, given he's the halfback, but you could take any number of players out of that Melbourne team and I wouldn't be as concerned about them. But, man, I just don't know where the organisation's coming from and the game management's coming from without Jerome Hughes in there. Like, Cameron Munster can do that to some extent, but then, like, you kind of want Cameron Munster to be playing Cameron Munster footy, right? And then, like, we haven't – Tyrone Wishart's another guy who kicks a lot. Like, maybe you can, but we haven't seen a lot in first grade. Like, I just don't know – where it's coming from for them. And then you take Pappy out, so you lose a bit of X factor. Yeah, it's a real shame. The Sharks should do this, but, like, yeah, it's kind of it's important for them they do, because I think they're treating this themselves as a bit of a litmus test, as much as we all are as well. And if they can't beat a Melbourne team that's without some key guys, then you do wonder if it does hit their confidence a bit ahead of games against the Roosters and Panthers. Just on the Sharks, man, like, I'm so impressed by their pack. Like, it's been questioned a bit in the last couple of years, and rightly so. And I know they've got Adam Finnell Blake going there next year, but the feeling at Cronulla was certainly like they've trusted these guys for a number of years now, and it's kind of the year where we're going to find out whether that trust is well placed. And yeah, they haven't played against, you know, the good sides yet and whatnot, but they've done a lot right in the games they have played, and their pack continues to do a lot right, even though they've had a fair few injuries in.
I think you've identified something important there, Scott. I think this is a big game for Cronulla's perception of themselves. They've only won one of their last seven against the Storm, and there's been some big losses in there, including a 54-10 belting when they went down to Amy Park last year. And that was like 34-6 at halftime. That was one of those games where we were texting each other saying things like, oh, bro, this could be 70, you know? Like, so I think it's important for their perception of themselves that they go down there and handle this stuff. And go on, Scott.
I was going to say, they know that too, because like that's the thing they kept talking about this week when I was out at Sharks on Tuesday, I think it was. And like the players all sort of raised that off their own bat. Like, last year wasn't getting brought up by the media or by us or whatever. It was all very much the players talking about it, because that was sort of the beginning of the end. Not the beginning of the end, but that was the end of Matt Moylan in a lot of ways, that game. But even like, I seem to remember a game, might have been 2022, was it? Or 2021, when similar circumstance. They went down there in like about round six and they got towed up. I remember Cameron McInnes had a really bad missed tackle.
Yeah.
And it was really similar. We all sort of went, oh, this will be a litmus test for the Sharks. And they got towed up in that one as well. So, yeah, agree.
There are places at this Melbourne team that I think the Sharks will go after. I think that Sharks left edge will really, really go at Will Warbrick, who's had a tough year defensively this season. Saw far along, like we all know how electrifying he is with the ball, but there probably is still an error or two in him. He is still just a young fella, so I'm expecting Hines to test him with his kicking game as much as he can. I think for Melbourne to win this, they need a really big one from Harry Grant. I don't think he's had the best season in terms of attacking footy so far this year. Maybe that's because Melbourne's forward pack is a little bit more workmanlike rather than blockbusting. But given that Hughes is out and they've got Tyron Wishart, who's probably a dummy half himself, playing halfback, I think they really, really need a big one from Grant. So if he fires and Munster fires, then the Storm are in with every chance. I don't think this will be a walkover for the Sharks at all. But I am taking Cronulla.
Yeah, me too.
Yep, all three.
Yeah, well, interesting. Wouldn't shock me if the Storm win this, but it's just this is too many weak spots at the moment. Just looking at the guys I've had to bring in and stuff. Not, I mean, for long I'm really excited to see him play again because he's just been very, very must watch TV in the limited time we've seen it. The way he moves, dude,
crazy. Like
that try last week was outrageous.
Oh, the swerve that he put on Phil the Power, couldn't believe it, yeah, bro.
See you later. All right, Sunday afternoon. Roosters, Warriors. Now, we're not going to fall into this trap. They do not play them well.
Famously. They do not play them well.
So, the Roosters, short price favorites. They've been in season best form. They've looked impenetrable. They've got the boon of a huge signing news with David Fita, which we'll talk about in the news section later on. So, it's all sunshine and roses in Bondi, which of course means that the Warriors will win this game.
Yeah, the Warriors, they need something. And they need something soon. I was surprised that they didn't make a change this week. I thought Tamari Martin was probably going to get dropped. Maybe Chanel Harris-Tavita's injured or something like that, but I think they needed a change somewhere in their spine because right now I don't think they're not getting enough creativity. Sean Johnson is doing what he can, but I don't think the execution has been there from the rest of them. And they were unfortunate against the Knights. Dallin Mattanis-Lesniak should have got that penalty try in the first half, and maybe that unlocks things for them. But there were a lot of times when they sort of had things going down that edge and it was just passes were a little bit behind people. The timing of the runs wasn't quite there. And I think for them to compete with a Roosters team that is really feeling themselves at the minute and is getting a big boost back with Spencer Lenu coming back into the team, they really need something and they need it soon. They'd probably have to operate at close to peak capacity to handle this Roosters team in this form. And they're not right there at the minute. So it could be a tough afternoon.
Boys, I have many theories on rugby league, but like my strongest theory on rugby league is that I never trust a team where a bunch of their guys have had career years all in one year. Mm. And like, again, that's the Warriors issue. It was the Cowboys last year. It was Manly the year before that. I think like, I don't know why we expect when guys are used to playing at like say 6.5 out of 10, and then they have a year where like heaps of players all play 8.5 or 9 out of 10. Why we expect all those players to play at that level again? Like surely the law of averages dictates that a lot of them will drop back to where they were. And I think that's what we've seen this year with the Warriors. Like obviously Chans is not a 6 out of 10 player, but like he's not playing at the same level he was last year. He played it superb last year. I don't think Dallin's been good, but he's not necessarily playing the level he was last year. Like Sean Johnson, again, it doesn't fall into a category of guy who had a career year, but like at his age, like he hasn't been able to replicate what he did last year. I don't think like they're not got the same zip in attack. They're not as clinical or as, you know, patient in a lot of ways as well. I feel like Wade Egan's had a rough couple of weeks. Like he started the season really well, but I don't feel like he's had a great few weeks. Like there's a number of guys you can go through there, but I just feel like they've sort of regressed to where.
Yeah.
Their normal standard is. It's not to say everyone has, but like all it takes is a few guys to regress to their normal standard, and then there's, you know, a team drops, and the year after year, I feel like there's one team it happens to, and it just looks to me like the Warriors are that team this year.
Yeah, it's almost like the Cowboys in 2022 is another example of this. And yeah, I agree with you, mate. Like, I mean, one brave boy picked them to finish 14th. Nick, where are they on the ladder right now?
Okay, they are. But when you made that pick, you lamented it. You said, "Oh shit, I shouldn't have done that."
Well, I did it though, so. It's all right. I also picked South to come like fourth, so
swings you know, and roundabouts.
Take the good with the bad. It's very funny that this is like the one thing that I've actually nailed this year in predictions was like completely by accident, just because I forgot to put the Warriors anywhere else and they were the last thing we previewed. But anyway, Scotty, well said. I agree with you. I think, yeah, just a bunch of those guys who played as good as they ever will last year. Some of them are still playing very well, but it's been a bit of a reality check for them this year. And it's a shame because it does feel like it's good for the sport when the Warriors are playing well and you've got that guy doing the shoeys and the stadium's getting sold out every week. And we had the portable tattoo parlor before the finals games last year. Like all that stuff was so, so good. And it just seemed better for the culture of the sport to have a strong and successful Warriors team. But right now it does feel like they need some sort of life support. They need some sort of charge injected in them to wake them up a bit, because it does seem like it's very quickly just gone a bit stale, everything that they do. Like those right side switches have stopped working with the same level of effectiveness that they had last year. They've been really struggling to score points in some of these games. And the Roosters are pretty good defensively and have a lot of very, very good outside backs. So it's going to be tough to see a lot of points for the Wires in this one too. I think I'm tipping the Roosters with some confidence, boys. But what matchups in particular are jumping off the page to you?
We've talked a lot about the Warriors having great starts and then not being able to sustain that when Fenua Blake's off the field. And the Roosters already were getting a fair bit out of their bench. But with Lenu back there, their bench is Watson, Nalfahu White, Lenu, and May. That is horrifying. Like, May might be the best bench forward in the entire competition because he comes on and just plays the last 60 straight and never seems to get tired. We all know about what Lenu brings with his carries and his aggression. White's taken some big steps forwards this year, and Watson's been playing great footy as well. So in terms of the Roosters' eternal battle between how they should play and how they do play, I feel like with that much forward power all coming off the bench and relieving Collins and Waria Hargraves, surely they're just going to go route one with this one. And I feel like if they go route one with all that speed and power, I don't know if there's a lot of teams that could handle them, let alone a team like the Warriors who seem to be on tilt right now. So that's the matchup that really stands out to me.
And for me, it's just like kind of building on the back of what Nick just said there, but like also just Angus Crichton through the middle. Once the Warriors have their bench guys on or they're tired or whatever, like Angus Crichton is playing such good footy at the moment, man. I know it's like, I'm not exactly saying anything huge by saying that because everyone's talking about it. But again, like I could just see Angus Crichton wreaking havoc against them on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So yeah, Roosters for me.
Yeah.
About time those plucky Roosters got a win, eh?
If you're not a Patreon and you despise the Roosters, you'll find yesterday's Patreon podcast very cathartic if you want to sign up patreon.com/rookies. A lot of people reached out and said that we summed up exactly how they were feeling about the situation, particularly me just screaming swear words into the microphone at the start for a minute straight. Oh, I hate them. Last game of the round, the Chaos Bowl. Surely we got to see some weird shit here. Titans Cowboys on a Sunday afternoon on the Gold Coast. No Tanner Boyd, Nick. Sorry to say. Chris Randall named a start in the halves.
What's going on? Well, there's some late mail going around that Randall will not play 5'8". Keanu Kinney will come into the starting side, and AJ Brimson will be moved from fullback to 5'8". And that is an interesting one to me because Brimson has just been so electrifying since he moved back to fullback a few weeks ago. And against the Storm last week, you could legitimately make the case that he was the best player on the field in a beaten side. I understand that they're low on halves with Boyd injured. I would almost consider playing Kinney at 5'8 instead because Brimson has just changed so much for this team since he went to fullback, and I would not want that to go away, regardless of who's playing in the halves, you know?
Yeah, they had him. He played 5'8 briefly in this game a month ago, didn't he, against the Cowboys, and that was where it all started to turn around for them. He came on the field. I can't remember who went off, but that was sort of the changing point, right? So as long as he can get his hands on the ball as much as he did in that game, and then obviously, yeah, as much as he has at fullback from then on since. But that's going to be key for the Titans, it goes without saying. The other interesting thing about this game for me is it's funny, like it was only a month or so ago they played on a Sunday arvo, and it feels like that's been a turning point for both teams. The Cowboys led pretty handsomely at halftime. I think Chad Townsend got binned, and the Titans threatened a comeback that was never really going to happen, but they threatened a comeback. And since then, the Titans have actually looked pretty good the last 4 weeks, to be fair. They've been competitive. They had the win over the Warriors. In contrast, I don't think the Cowboys have won a game since then. They've been really poor. So it kind of, it's interesting, like whether it just sort of carries on from where it was, and not carries on, but if that second half of that game is sort of what we're going to see more of come Sunday.
Two Titans Cowboys games in 5 weeks is very strange, but I think you've hit on something there, Scotty. Like, I know that the Titans have only won one of the four games they've played since then, but they lost by a point to the Raiders. They lost by four to Manly. They beat the Warriors, and they lost by two to Melbourne. So the blowouts of the earlier part of the season are not as apparent as they were. So they do seem to have definitely found something. I am giving up getting a read on the Cowboys. I have no idea what they're going to do, how they're going to do it. Hopefully that means we do get a real chaos bowl, because that's all we can count on in these uncertain times.
Yeah, well, the Titans are basically out of the running for the 4X Derby trophy if they lose.
Oh, no.
Very early in the year to be out of the running for the 4X Derby.
Well, I mean, they'd be 0-3 and the Cowboys would be 3-0, and they'd only have three more 4X Derbies to play. And with both Brisbane and the Dolphins already having two wins each, I dare say that would make it mathematically impossible for the Titans to win the 4X Derby.
Well, it's been a real silverware drought up at the Titans.
I mean, if you could offer them
a while since they brought home a trophy,
mate, if you could offer their fans a lifetime contract for David Fifita or this year's 4X Derby, I think most of them would take the latter. And who could blame them?
Well, we have been accused of just not getting the 4X Derby. You know, it's like Origin. You either get it or you don't, and somehow we can't. So,
well, I think we nailed the 4X Derby, and your idea of relegating the worst team and having Ipswich replace them is fantastic. I don't know why they haven't done that, but anyway, yeah, I dare say that I am tipping the Cowboys to end the Gold Coast 4X Derby dreams, but you've gone the opposite way, Nick.
Yeah, I thought, why not? Can't trust the Cowboys. Can't trust can't trust their consistency or how they play. Getting beat by the Dolphins up at home last week, that was maybe not a nail in the coffin, but you would have hoped that after the promising showing they put in against Penrith, they're getting a big home game against another Queensland side. You would have thought they would take care of business, and they didn't. So the form guide says the Titans should be in with a shot, but the Cows are a team that exists outside the realms of form. It is not something that they concern themselves with. They could lose this game. They could also win this game by 40. I'm giving up trying to predict what they're going to do. All it does is hurt me.
You got the deciding vote, Scotty?
Yeah, I honestly, much as Campo, flip the coin on this, but I'm going the Titans just because I feel like I know what I'm going to get from them. I don't know what I'm going to get from the Cowboys. And not a game in New South Wales. We know the Cowboys don't necessarily travel well to New South Wales, but it's about 10 kilometres up the road from New South Wales. So
yeah, it's quite far.
That probably puts me in the category of the Titans. Who knows?
Maybe we redraw the borders and we get the Titans into the Tui's new derby.
There wasn't we go. That why they were tweeting at Seagulls to start off with? Because they couldn't have another team in Queensland back in the...
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
They couldn't.
Brisbane had an exclusivity agreement with the league. So they were the Gold Coast Tweed Giants, so they could say that they weren't exclusively based in Southeast Queensland.
Yeah, that's one of my favourite misnomers when we were kids, was like they'd act like the Cowboys and the Broncos was a local derby. And it's like it's substantially further away to Brisbane.
I was much older than I should have been when I realized that was the case. Yeah.
Well, it'd be all the Roosters in Melbourne, the local derby.
Yeah, it makes you feel better, Cam. But like the first time me and Charlie went to America, I wanted to see the Celtics play, and we were only going to Los Angeles, and they were playing the Sacramento Kings, and I was like, oh, it's all the same state. How far away can it be? So we bought tickets without checking. It's a 5-hour drive.
That's only half the distance of Townsville to Brisbane, right?
Yeah, exactly. Only halfway. So, yeah.
You've got Vitelli Lesniak interested in coming in to make the tackle. It's come off Lesniak. Wrong foot's bearing.
Okay, we already discussed Turbo at the top of the show, but we've had the news break while we're recording. Thankfully not after we finished recording. 2 months on the sideline, Scott.
Oh.
Yeah, I think we'll learn more in the next... I mean, that could well be the case, and that's what they were suggesting last night, if it's a grade 2 hamstring tear, but I think we'll have that confirmed later today. So as the 2 months is what I was kind of working on when we spoke earlier. Even so, if he was to return, say, on in early July, which is what I'd sort of base that on, that still means only missing 5 games for Manly. He would miss games against Brisbane, Melbourne, Penrith, but that's a game after an Origin match he probably wouldn't have played in anyway. The Dragons, Souths, and then
And
they
then
have
buy, and then
and back against the Cowboys on July 6 if he was to be back that week.
yeah.
So
So as I said, like the fact that he would have missed a couple of those for Origin as well, like it's bad, but it could have been a lot worse.
but yeah, that's the word out of Manly at the moment, but they haven't got the results of the
Well,
skids. So.
this was a story. This was in the Herald about half an hour ago.
Yeah, no, I've read that, and that's the, and I'm not questioning for a second Adrian's
Sounds like you are.
no, I'm just saying that what we have is what we had, what was coming out of Manly last night, but I think we'll get confirmation on that or any slight changes to that in the next few hours, maybe by the time people listen.
Maybe. Okay. And well, look, the big news, depending on how you look at it, but Craig Bellamy, he's not leaving. He's sticking around for another year. And Nick, your response to this was, he does this every year.
He does this every year. Every year he says, "Oh, this might be it. This might be it. I might hang it up. I'm serious this time." And then he re-ups for another year. So, come on, Craig. Something.
But yeah, it's my favorite ongoing soap opera, this Willie or won't he? Like, for how many years is poor Jason Rolls going to be linked to that chair before something actually gives and Bellamy hangs it up? But it is funny that he was being linked to like the South's job by who knows who created that rumor, and he's been linked with Broncos in the past, but sticking strong with the Storm.
Go on, go
I
on,
was
go
going to
on.
say, where this story will go eventually, though, is if Parra lose a few more games and the Heat really gets on BA, like I don't know if Jason Rolls is on there, is on a list that they've considered, but like eventually clubs are going to keep knocking on Jason Rolls' door and say, "Hey, yeah, like you've got a good club to take over down there, but like how long is it going to be until you get your chance? Why don't you come and take your chance up at the Eels or yes, South or wherever the case may be?" Because Jason Rolls can coach. There's big raps on him. He's always, for the last, say, 5 years, he's been one of those guys that we all thought was next in line, but he keeps waiting for the Bellamy job. I just wonder if eventually a club tempts him into saying, "Well, Craig's been saying 1 more year for a lifetime now. Take your chance."
Yep, I agree.
Next year's the last year, though. Definitely.
Oh,
Definitely, dude.
definitely.
100%.
Can't wait for April next year to have this story all
Yeah,
over again.
100. Yeah.
So we did a whole Patreon emergency show yesterday, but if you're not a patron, we'll talk about it again. Dave Fifita signing with the Sydney Roosters. I hate everything. I think the sport should be dissolved. I don't know why we're still here. Tune in next week when we become a full-time Fallout TV show and Fallout New Vegas video game podcast. I can't wait for that pivot. I think people will back us in.
You think so?
Well, you haven't played Fallout New Vegas, nor have you watched the show, but I feel like you'll get a feel for
It's
it.
gonna be yeah, it's it'll be tough for me to adapt, but I'll do my best. The Roosters very rarely miss out on guys that they really, really want. They had a bit of money to play with all their blokes leaving. This has sort of been framed as the Roosters or the Panthers were getting a project player, they were getting an underperforming million-dollar player. That's just not true. Like, Fifita's been one of the best back rowers in the league for 18 months now. He finally did what everyone wanted. He married up his great attacking play with a really strong work rate and really consistent efforts. And guess what? No one gave a shit because no one actually cared about David Fifita. Everyone just wanted to come out and take shots because he was on this big, big money. You know what I mean? So the Roosters are getting an athlete and a footballer. They're getting probably the most talented back rower in the league. You could make the case that he's the best back rower in the league. It's a slam dunk. It's going to go great for them. And
Yeah, as
I don't think anyone likes it except for the many Roosters fans out there.
as I said to you before, mate, it's funny to me just how the perception of David Fifita is, just because of the million-dollar tag that's been thrown his way and the fact that he plays for the Titans. But you rattled through all the stats when we talked about this yesterday, and this isn't a guy that's sort of floating in and out of games and popping up and touching the ball 4 or 5 times and trying to throw a flick pass or score a try when the going's easy. This is a guy that's been absolutely eating meters. He's been fully involved in terms of tackle breaks, try assists, both this year and last. He's been playing extremely good football for the Gold Coast Titans since the start of last year. And as you touched on yesterday, we're going to get to next year. He's going to play exactly as well as he's playing right now, and everyone's going to go, "Oh, well, the Roosters fixed him." And I'm just really not prepared for that.
I'll bounce through the numbers really, really quickly. So last year, he was first among back rowers in meters per game. He was first among back rowers in tackle bus. He was second among back rowers in offloads. Sixth across the entire league for tackle bus. Fifth across the entire league for offloads. First among back rowers for try assists. More try assists than Ezra Mamm, mind you. And then this year, even though he's been coming off the bench and it's been a bit strange up there, he's averaging 140 meters per game, which guess what is the most of any back rower in the league. Like,
well, the kick out was crazy.
They're getting the finished product, dude. They're getting something that's true blue.
It says a bit that like Penrith and the Roosters were the two teams after him. Like they don't buy duds. Like when was the last time that one of those two clubs brought a guy in? I mean, Panthers haven't brought a guy in for a long time, but like I think that shows where he stands, and you're right. Like it shows how ridiculous it is that people think it was, you know, a project player or there's a guy that's sort of yet to reach his potential or you know, isn't close to fulfilling his potential. Man, the mail was so strong on this on Penrith getting him.
I was talking
to people up in the Gold Coast on Wednesday, and they seemed to be of the opinion it was going to be them or Penrith that had him, and the Roosters weren't really a real chance or a real shot at it, and maybe weren't that serious about it. Penrith were confident, like real confident. They were surprised, I think, yesterday when they found out that they didn't land him. So I'll be honest, I was pretty surprised. I was too.
Yeah, and disappointed and angry and sad.
Yeah. I tell you what's interesting now is where Penrith goes. So they, I know, and I wrote earlier this week that they approached, or at least they made inquiries with Angus Crichton's manager last
week. Great player, playing really well.
About just where his future lies and what his interests are in terms of, you know, whether he's serious about going to rugby, whether he's going to stay it out, all those kind of things. So I think Penrith will take a few days now to take stock and work out where they go. But I think Angus Crichton's a real chance of being a target for them. They certainly view, or it's, there's a good chance that they'll view a second rower as their option to replace James Fisher-Harris. Like that was obviously the case the way they went through with pursuing David Fifita so publicly. It's interesting because like people, I've seen a few people being like, oh, well, Penrith don't purchase from outside the area. Why are they doing this? But you know, they have a system where like they just know where guys are going to slot in and when a guy's going to be ready. And usually like that's why they're prepared to let people go. But the Fisher-Harris one really blindsided them. They didn't see it coming. Yeah. Why they need to fill that gap. I know Stefano Utakumanu is not an option for them. They're not after him. So they don't think that there's really the talent out there.
Mark Nichols is off contract.
He could be back at South next year.
Like Scotty, you can say the talent's not out there. Fafita wasn't out there till 2 weeks ago.
No, but that's so, you know, I mean, in the front row.
I'm more just saying you never know.
Well, to be fair, I feel like Fafita's just been perpetually out there for like 4 years. Even like from the day he signed with the Titans, it was like, could Brisbane get him back? Could he go to Canberra? Who knows?
No, it's a good point though, Dan. But like, I know what you're saying. But like, I don't think of the guys, like, and you're right, Stefano's probably essentially in the same situation David Fifita was in. But I don't think he's the guy the Panthers want. I think they're more likely to go down the line of a second rower who, I mean, Angus Crichton wouldn't be a bad one because they could use him in the middle a little bit if they needed to as well. I don't think they'd go that path. But, you know, he offers that at least if they needed to. Anyway, it's interesting to sort of see where they go from here. And then I guess what the Titans try and do, they'll have a bit of coin to try and pursue a 5'8 once Kieran Foran finishes up. And I mentioned Jaden Stewart.
Maybe I'm just sort of like thinking out loud for Penrith's purposes. I'm just looking at the guys who are off contract for next year. Like maybe Jordan McLean could be someone that might go after, but it's not like, it's not exactly a murderer's row of props and second rowers when I go through this.
I think the whole idea is get a second rower. You can move Sorensen back to the middle where he's probably more effective anyway.
Well, even then, it's like Jaden Sewer maybe. He's been playing really good football, but there's not a lot outside him. Jack Williams, perhaps.
I think they're only looking for two. So I think they've got a guy they believe is going to be ready in 2027. His name
I'm not going to lose sleep over Penrith's fortunes. Yeah.
Maybe they can use the excess money to join the top tier of the Patreon.
Maybe they could. Exciting. Yeah. That's definitely an option for them, Nick. A very good point. And just on that, I will give a quick thank you to the people in our top two tiers of our Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/rookies, you get access to our Discord server, an extra show every week. And this week, you got two extra shows. We got the bonus show yesterday for the Fifita signing. You get merch discounts, access to a Discord server, and our Magic Round meetup is, of course, coming up this Saturday. Well, sorry, next 8 days from the time you hear this. So very, very exciting times ahead. Thank you too. A perverted female listener. Sup, Chris Abnell, Dave, Stu, stupid sexy Hines, your Dally M God. Tough times when your whole weekend rides on the Friday 6 p.m. game and you're playing one of the greatest teams of all time. A nightmare on Caxton Street, Adam Small, Alex Sergicomi, Alien versus Predator, Broncos legend, Adam Reynolds, Bruce the Piding Pom, Butsy, Campo stood down after being spotted outside a pub exchanging blows, G-backer Snuffle up against Dan Cullinane, David, an anonymous backer, Ed Burton, Friday night footy, Getty in the ICU, give Snap the fucking ball. Give Snap the fucking ball. Future Chive Churchill medalist Lewis Dodd, Jason Joel Wrigley, John, kick Souths out of the comp. Kick Souths. Just kick them. Maybe that'll help. Lachlan Hancock, Langdon Olga, Luke Charles Smidwell, Mads, Taylor's Virgin, Matthew Duggan, Morgan Watkins. My Dally M votes, 3, War and Peace, 2, Great Expectations, 1, Wuthering Heights. My ding ding dong is hard and I'm sad. Never trendy for Sami Army. Paul Mac 78, push it up your ass, Manly. Push it up, Manly. Reese Brown. Reed Marnie is Drake to front row forward Kendrick. Rat beef in 2024 is plant-based. Rowan Edwards, Roxanne Clark, see you in Vegas, Shunter Ty, TB, the black vegetable, the Brisbane sniper, Thor, Tuesday has no feel. Was Zenny Lesniak, and Westlife podcast, Souths were cowards in 1909, and some say they still are. Thank you so much for your support to everyone in lower tiers and everyone who listens. Thank you as well. By the way, I did nail it. Luke messaged me after the show on Monday that onomatopoeia was meant to be the Tim the Toolman grunt, as I've just done. So... good stuff.
Right. I'm glad that worked out for you.
Thank you, mate. Yeah. Some really good ones.
Some terrific names on there. Yeah. Give Snap the fucking ball, 100%. But yeah, some great stuff going on there.
Oh, Scott, you got anything to promote before we get out of here?
Just read good stuff and hopefully some of that good stuff is AAV.
I will buy you a beer at Magic Round if you find whoever gets the most obscure news source with a Scott Bailey story on it, I'll buy you a beer. So like,
if you start a news organization just to get Scott Bailey yarns on there,
yeah,
someone will buy you 2 beers.
Yeah, I will buy you many beers because it will give AAP more money, which, you know, will give me more money.
You're coming up, right?
So just gotta keep the money moving. That's the important
thing. I have a Bucks party up there, so I'm not working. I've got a Bucks party.
Yes, that's great. Cut loose, Scott Bailey. Let's go.
Who's Bucks is it, my bro?
Do you know Zach Brown?
Yeah, I know. I went to school with him for a bit. Yeah,
I thought you did. Brownie's Bucks. So it's going to be great.
I'm going to guess it's not the guy from the Zach Brown band.
Unbelievably, it's not.
Are you impressed? I know who that is.
I am, actually. Yeah, I didn't think you would.
I don't know who that is, but I'm pretty
a country music guy.
That's why I don't know.
Yeah. All right, let's get the hell out of here. Say goodbye, Scott. Thank you for coming on.
Goodbye, Scott.
Say goodbye, Campo.
Goodbye, Bertrand.
That's goodbye from me.